the end. This is our last class for this spring season, spring summer. We will adjourn. Probably, we'll probably start up again at the end of August, beginning of September. I suspect we'll start up again.
Before yet.
I suspect so. But in the meantime, we had been discussing, I think, not last week, not the week before, not the week before that. It was our last class. When was our last class?
Linda will tell you.
No, I know exactly where we were, but I was just May 19th? Yeah. So back in May. Back in May 19th.
I told you Linda would tell you. She does it May 19th, you know.
Right. So back in May 19th, we were discussing
the... That
was a long time ago. Wow. We were discussing Beit Shemesh. Anybody remember Beit Shemesh?
Yeah.
Okay. Remember the story of Beit Shemesh. And we had a whole conversation about the magnitude of the tragedy in Beit Shemesh, 50,000 and the 70, and what it referred to, and was 50,000 70, or was it two different phrases? 70.
We're still having problems with Beit Shemesh.
Well, those are different kinds of issues, and those are. Since I record everything and post it online, I'm much safer if I stay away from contemporary issues. So.
It's still not
yours. This is everywhere. Neither does it may. That was the last issue that we talked about, and the sort of one issue which I left because it's a kind of a postscript to the whole perek, I thought we would do as a kind of standalone shiur today, and that will sort of bring this whole picture and this whole story to a close, is the story of Kiryat Ye'arim. Because we go to the end of the paragraph, and remember it's chapter 7, verse 1, Perek Zayin Pasuk Aleph, which is a strange place to put this pasuk. And we've talked about the fact that paragraph breaks are of Jewish tradition and origin, whereas chapter breaks are not. Sometimes there's a clear issue or agenda in the chapter divisions of Tanakh. Sometimes it's very logical and matches the traditional division. And sometimes it just, there isn't necessarily a rhyme or reason to it. And it's just either arbitrary or somewhat elusive. This paragraph, which the last verse of Perek Vav, Pasuk Chaf Aleph, reads, Vayishlechu malachim el yoshvei Kiryat Ye'arim. People in Beit Shemesh sent messengers to the inhabitants of Kiryat Ye'arim, Lemor Hashivu Plishtim et Aron Hashem. And they said to them, the Plishtim have returned the Aron Hashem. Redu ha'alu otom alechem. Come down, get it, take it from us. Take it away from us. We can't handle this thing. Vayavo anshei Kiryat Ye'arim. This is Perek Zayin Pasuk Aleph. Vayavo anshei Kiryat Ye'arim. Ve'alu et Aron Hashem. So the people of Kiryat Ye'arim came, they packed up the Aron, they took it with them. They took it up to Beit Avinadav in the Givah of Kiryat Ye'arim. Bet Elazar b'no kiddushu lishmor at Aron Hashem. And they put somebody in charge of it, his name was Elazar, and he was designated to guard the Aron. And that's really the end of the story in Beit Shemesh, that's where the paragraph breaks. Why that last pasuk is the first verse of chapter 7 in the chapter divisions is unclear. I'm going to leave that question open. But in all cases, the last piece of it is they finally take the Aron to a place where it will rest securely, namely in this city called Kiryat Ye'arim. So there are two questions that I wanted to raise about Kiryat Ye'arim. First of all, the geography of Kiryat Ye'arim we've talked about before. Kiryat Ye'arim today is known as Tellstone. Have you ever been to the area of Tellstone? There's a big sign as you enter, Kiryat Yarim, he tells them. We'll talk about where that... It's northwest of Yerushalayim. I'll show it to you on a map in a moment.
Near your kids.
But the question that I was intrigued by was not just where Kiryat Yarim is and what Kiryat Yarim is in terms of its history, but why did they just assume right away when Beit Shemesh clearly was going through this terrible tragedy, why did they just assume that the place to send it to would be Kiryat Yarim? It wasn't like they sent out an APB public call, okay, who wants this thing? Right? They very specifically sent messengers to Kiryat Yarim, and Kiryat Yarim heretofore has been a nothing or a nobody. There's been no reference to it virtually, and certainly in terms of the Aron, the role of the Aron. If anything, where should they have sent the Aron? Well, Yerushalayim doesn't exist really for all intents and purposes at this point. Shiloh. I would imagine Shiloh. So even if the Mishkan had been destroyed, at least there was, you know, there was the Kohanim, there was the something. Or we have cities that are known as cities of Kohanim, like Nov. Maybe send it to there, but...
Didn't they send it there at one point?
Later, after Kiryat Yarim. It'll get to... Well, sort of. Actually, what happens to the Aron is it splits. The Mizbeach goes to Nov, and the Aron goes to Kiryat Yarim. So the Aron and Mizbeach, at this point in time, after the fall of Shiloh, the Aron and the Mizbeach are separated. One of the things that we talked about, if you remember this conversation, it was the very first year we had in Sefer Shmuel, was the structure of Nevi'im Rishonim and why Sefer Shmuel is a separate Sefer. And one of the things I had talked about was the fact that it's transitional in terms of the role of the Mishkan, not necessarily. It's normally perceived as transitional in terms of the role of the Mikta, of the role of the Malchus, but I'd suggested that it may more importantly be a reflection of the fact that throughout Sefer Shmuel, the Aron and the Mizbeach are separated, whereas in Sefer Shoftim you have this Mishkan in Shiloh. In Sefer Malachim, which begins very early with the building of the Beit HaMikdash, Sefer Shmuel from beginning to end, from Shmuel Aleph through to Shmuel Bet, all through the time of David HaMelech, you have the split between the Aron and the Mizbeach. The Aron is in Kiryat Yarim, and eventually, and the Mizbeach, which goes to a couple of places, but it starts in, at this point, it's in Nov. So the story of Kiryat Yarim is an interesting mystery. And I thought we would just geography, a little bit of Eretz Yisrael today. Right? Just the geography of Eretz Yisrael, a little bit of the story of Kiryat Yarim, where it is, who it is, what it is, and why I think they assumed it needed to go, not back to Shiloh, but they needed to send it to maybe specifically Kiryat Yarim, or maybe somewhere in the area. It's unclear why Kiryat Yarim has been a non-entity in the conversation up until this point. And so how do they pluck that city out of a hat? That's a mystery.
So how far is Shiloh from Kiryat Yarim?
So we're going to do all of the geography today.
Shiloh
from Beit Shem. The issue isn't how far...
If you're on a camel.
That's still far.
The issue isn't how far Shiloh is from Kiryat Yarim. The issue is how far either one of them is from Beit Shemesh. At the end of the question isn't how far Shiloh is from Kiryat Yarim. The question is how far any one of them is from Beit Shemesh. Because remember, the Aron's in Beit Shemesh.
Right. That's pretty close.
Right. Shiloh is here.
Yeah. Where's Beit Shemesh?
Okay, Beit Shemesh. Beit Shemesh should be just around here. Just past the orange border. I remember Beit Shemesh is sort of south of Latrun, if you go. It's not listed on this map, but my guess it's just about...
Very close to Latrun.
southeast, though?
Yes. It's just southwest of Tzor'ah. So if here's Tzor'ah, Beit Shemesh is here.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. So if you're sending the Aron to Kiryat Yarim, or you're sending the Aron to Shiloh, I don't necessarily know that that was the issue, especially because Shiloh had a 370-year history with the Aron. Kiryat Yarim, you know nothing about.
Maybe they wanted a name change.
Maybe. Maybe. But then again, where? Why Kiryat Yarim?
Like wipe out the whole.
Must have been somebody there or something, or somebody.
Yeah, it had to be some personal.
Right.
So that's again, it's unclear. All we have is this basic bit of Nadav. We have no reference to history to any names of people, or we don't even necessarily know that it's a that they're a coin. It's a non-player. It enters into the scene as a non-player virtually, and so that's the mystery of Kiryat Yarim. So there's two possibilities or two pieces of background information we need to know about Kiryat Yarim. First of all, Kiryat Yarim is a city that has been mentioned several times before in Tanakh, specifically in Sefer Yehoshua. What do we know about Kiryat Yarim? So the first thing we need to know about Kiryat Yarim is in Yehoshua. Actually, some of these sources I put on the source page. So if you want to look at it that way, it'll save you time flipping through Tanakh. If you want to flip the Tanakh, you're welcome to do that too. I'll have to excuse my voice, which cracks like a bar mitzvah boy these days. It's not a cold. It's some sort of laryngitis. Not a cold. It's got source number 8 on your source page, or Yehoshua Perek Tet Pasuk Yud Zayin. What's Perek Tet Pasuk Yud Zayin? Perek Tet. Anybody remember what Yehoshua Perek Tet was about? Way back when?
It's 5?
No. Yehoshua Perek Tet is the story of the Givonim. Who or what are the Givonim? Now I'm really testing you, because this goes back to Yehoshua. Mm-hmm. And we learned Yehoshua. Oh.
A long time. And was at the academy, too.
Was it at the academy?
Yes, it was at the academy.
We started there.
I think we started midway in Yeshua. Mm-hmm. We came. But the story of the Givonim. Yeah.
That's at the carpool. It was 9:15, yes.
Mm-hmm. Year?
Yes.
But it was more than a year ago. But that's
yes, but
it's
more than a year ago.
Givonim were the group of Canaanites, local indigenous, that dressed up in order to trick Yehoshua that they came from far away. That's exactly the story of the Givonim. And right, and they are from the area. If you look on the map, here's Gilgal where Yehoshua was at the time. Right, here's Gilgal where Yehoshua was at the time. Givon, which is where the Givonim are from. It's not far. It's right in the hills, right in the same area, in fact. And Givon is not just one city. Givon was a series of cities. It was a group of cities together. And if you look at the source quote that I put on the page, which is Perek Tet Pasuk Yizayin, Vayisu b'nei Yisrael v'yavo el areihem b'yom ha'shlishi. They remember that after the Givonim had tricked Yehoshua into making this alliance, they were being attacked. Because they had made this alliance, and then they called Yeshua and they said, okay, we made an alliance with you, time for you to come and protect us. And Yeshua had a moral dilemma. Does he honor the pact that he made under duress and under guise of false pretense with the Givonim, or does he abandon the Givonim, because they were Canaanites, and risk the reputation of not living up to the oath that he had taken. In fact, he comes to their aid, he protects them, and the cities that are listed there as the cities of the Givonim are Be'arehem, Givon, V'yakfira, Uve'erot, V'kiryat Yarim. So the first interesting observation about Kiryat Yarim is that if we go back to the earliest references to Kiryat Yarim in Nach, Kiryat Yarim was a Givonite city.
So maybe they could protect
our embedders. This is 400 years. We've got a long way to go. Okay, we've got to build this step by step. But that's number one, that Kiryat Yarim is a city that belongs to the area of the Givon or the Givonim. The other thing we know about Kiryat Yarim is that typically it went by two names. It was called Kiryat Yarim, but it had another name. And the other name is actually referenced in a number of different places in Tanakh that in Yeshua Perek Tetvav, actually, take a look at it in the Tanakh. It'll be. I want to see the context of this.
Page 276.
Everybody has it? So Yeshua Perek Tetvav is a part of Sefer Yeshua. Is it too cold?
Yes. Yes. Judy swears. Yes. I'm wearing a jacket.
To make it warmer, I can just.
It's freezing. I'm never going to turn on
20. It is 67.5 degrees in here.
That's cold.
Well, Rabbi, I don't know what you keep your temperature on at home, but 67.5 degrees. The show must have.
It's not what it's set at. What it's set at is 72. I didn't say it's set at 67.
Put it at 79.
It is 67. It is set at 72.
But even 72 is high.
No, 70. It's usually set at 70. The air conditioning is usually set at 70.
I don't.
And then let's not. I'm going to go there. That's a complicated story, by the way, the system works, which is not our issue right now.
It's not in Perek Tetvav.
Perek Tetvav, Vahi Hagoral Mate Bnei Yehuda Lemishpachotam. This is a section of Sefer Yehoshua which, if you remember, discusses or identifies the boundaries of each Shevet, where they were, what the cities that belonged to each tribe were. In Tanakh terms, and really pretty much historically up until, I don't know exactly when the transition takes place, but maps of boundaries were not lines on a map. You didn't have maps. So when you wanted to identify the boundary of one tribe to another, the way you did it was by listing all the cities that belonged to one tribe and all the cities that belonged to another. When you start drawing lines between them, if you play, remember, play Connect the Dots, mm-hmm. If you start drawing lines between the boundary cities, what you'll find is that they certainly don't go by a straight line. They go by wherever the population was and wherever the cities were that were identified one to the other, and the cities were divided up sometimes arbitrarily. Sometimes you had a single city that belonged to Ephraim that was sitting inside Menashe, or you had a single city or a group of cities inside Yehuda that really belonged to Binyamin, or back and forth. The boundaries are not straight lines. If you look at the map of the United States, you find the same phenomenon. The early colonies that defined the United States, right, the boundaries between them were based on population centers, and so the borders or the boundaries between the states are very ragged lines. Whereas the later states that were created by drawing lines on a map, they have boundaries that are very clear, straight lines between them. If you look at a map of the United States, you can see that. Right? Everything west of the Mississippi is pretty much blocks, and everything east of the Mississippi is kind of like jagged lines. Mm-hmm. It's 'cause it's the same issue. Your boundaries between your division between your states was based on what the population centers were and not necessarily a straight line on the map. And so the way in which you expressed the boundary of the Gvul of a particular tribe was to list all the cities. And that's exactly what you have. Vahi ha-goral ha-mate b'nei Yehuda l'mishpachotam el gvul edom mid-bar-tzin negba mid-bar-tzin. All the different names of the cities and the boundary, the geographic areas that bordered the areas. Yeah, broad geographic regions that bound, that created a boundary, and then a list of all the cities inside. Skip now down to Pasuk Yud. Pasuk Tet. Vata'ar ha'gvul me'rosh ha'har el ma'ayan me'naftach v'yatza el arei har Ephron v'tar ha'gvul ba'ala hi Kiryat Ya'arim. So the boundary, whatever these places are, but the boundary of this particular area ended up in a place called Ba'al or Ba'ala hi Kiryat Ya'arim. And so suddenly Kiryat Ya'arim takes on another name, but namely Ba'al or Ba'ala. Pasuk Yud, v'nasava gvul mi Ba'ala yama el har Seir. And from Kiryat Ya'arim, the border or the boundaries of Shevet Yudah headed west to har Seir, v'yavar el ketef har Ya'arim mitzafona, and the rest of it for now I'm going to skip. Take a look again in Pasuk Samach, which starts to list all the cities. The end of this parak. It's a list of all the cities in Shevet Yehuda, including Kiryat Arba. What was Kiryat Arba?
Hebron.
It says so right in Pasuk Nun Gimel. V'chutma v'kiryat arba hi Hebron. Pasuk Nun Dalet. Right? Chutma v'kiryat arba hi Hebron v'tzior arim teisha v'chatzvehen. It's just various places in the tribe and their various cities. And in Pasuk Samach, kiryat ba'al hi kiryat yarim. So Kiryat Ya'arim goes by another name. Which is either Ba'ala or Kiryat Ba'al.
Sounds like idol to me.
Right. And Kiryat Ba'al would mean... So why is it called Kiryat Ya'arim? So there's a whole conversation to be had as to what at what point this name shifts from Kiryat Ba'al to Kiryat Ya'arim, which was the Israelite name, which was the Canaanite name, or Givonite name, whatever the name, however you would pronounce it. But Baal certainly reminds us a little bit, or is reminiscent of, some element of Baal. Right? Cities were named Baal because they're much as we named cities Beit El, and because it was a house of God or a house of worship, the Canaanites would have called the city Kiryat Baal or Beit Baal or something along that line, because that's who they worship. Right? They worship Baal. So the fact that Kiryat Ya'arim has a history not only to the Givonim but also of somehow a connection to a cultural identity with religious significance of the ancient world may in fact be interesting. How long does this name Kiryat Baal or Baal stick around? It's referred to as Kiryat Ya'arim. How long it sticks around is interesting. We think, relatively speaking, once we refer to it as Kiryat Ya'arim, we should drop the name Baal from its identity. One would think, right? You have on the chart on the source page Shmuel Bet Perek Vav. What's going on in Shmuel Bet Perek Vav? Anybody recognize the general placement of that perek in Tanakh? Shmuel Bet Perek Vav is...
Was that when he's running away from Shaul?
No. He's running away from Shaul and Shmuel Aleph. Shaul dies at the beginning of Shmuel Bet. Okay. The end of Shmuel Aleph. Perek Vav and Perek Zayin is is the whole discussion that David HaMelech has about building the Beit HaMikdash. So Perek Zion is the famous Perek where the Navi comes to him and he says, you can't build the Beit HaMikdash, your son will build the Beit HaMikdash instead. Right, that he wants to build it, but he can't. David HaMelech, in the lead up to that story, had taken the Aron and brought it from Kiryat Yarim, where it had remained since the days of Shmuel, towards Yerushalayim, where he wanted to build the Beit HaMikdash. So, for example, in Perek Vav, Vayosef od David et kol b'chu Yisrael 30 Aleph, Vayakom vayelech David v'chol ha'am asher ito, David took all of the people who were with him, and he went mi ba'alei Yehuda, down to Ba'alei Yehuda, l'halot misham et aron elokim, to take the Aron from Ba'alei Yehuda, asher nikra shem Hashem tzvot yosheva kruvim alav, the Aron upon which was the name of God, God who dwelt amongst the kruvim, and they put the Aron on wagons, and they carried it vayisu mi bet pasuk gimel vayarkivu et Aron elokim el agala chadasha vayisu mi bet Avinadav asher bagivah, and they carried it from the house of Avinadav in the givah. What is the house of Avinadav?
The same thing.
It's the Avinadav to which they sent the Aron in the day after the aftermath of Beit Shemesh. It's David HaMelech was the one who went down there to take the Aron out, bring it to Yerushalayim. Remember the story of Uzzah and Peretz? As they're carrying the... It's read as a Haftorah, so that's why we remember it. They carried it, they took it, put it on this wagon, and as along the way, kind of the wagon slips, and Uzzah and Peretz grab it, and not of an Aviyu style, they were destroyed instantly. Right. It's actually Haftorah Parshat Shmini. Leaving aside the story of what happens to it, but David had gone down to this place to take the Aron from Beit Avinadav and bring it to Yerushalayim. Eventually gets detoured because of that tragedy, and he places it in...
So that would be at least 40 years later now.
When it is a conversation we'll have, Bezrat Hashem. Whether it's not 40 years later, it's actually probably 20 years later. It's not what the phraseology, what the term, the time frame is a different issue. But where is the Aron? In Beit Avinadav. In what city?
Givah.
Kiryat Yarim.
Oh.
How is it referred to here?
Givah.
No.
Isn't it?
Vayakom dayelech David v'chol ha'am asher ito mi ba'alei Yehuda la'alot misham et aron elokim. What is ba'alei Yehuda? So Rashi points out that the very same pasuk in Divrei Hayomim, remember, most of this period of history is repeated in Divrei Hayomim, and the same pasuk in Divrei Hayomim reads, Vayal David v'chol Yisrael ba'alata el Kiryat Yarim la'alot misham et Yehuda. The same Kiryat Baal or ba'alat or ba'ala that we saw in Yehoshua is referred to in Sefer Shmuel as Kiryat Baal or ba'alei Yehuda. So it's interesting that this name, this identity with Baal, which was its older history, it's like when the city of Luz is renamed. What was the city of Luz renamed?
Betel.
Yaakov, it says, by Yaakov it says, or by Avram actually, it says that he placed his tent between Betel and Yam. Ulam Luz Shem Ha'ir Levishana. Yaakov also comes to Betel. Luz Shem Ha'ir Levishana. The name of the city was originally Luz. Conquered, changed, Israelites called it Betel. And that's it. Its name remains Betel. You don't go back and call it Luz. Whereas here, for some reason that's unclear, Kiryat Yarim and Baal or Baala or Baalei Yehuda or Kiryat Baal, and all of these names for it kind of hover in the background.
So there's a fourth name that belongs to that three up there.
Well, it's all the same. Kiryat Yarim, there's two names. Kiryat Yarim is referred to as either Baal or Kiryat Baal or Baal or
Baal Yehuda.
It's all the same. It's all variations on
Baal.
The city of Baal. The city of Baal is problematic for us because Baal was not necessarily Fununzer, right? It wasn't one of ours. But nonetheless, that is its name. So that may raise one possibility, which is that they sent the Aron to Kiryat Yarim. Again, we're dealing with Beit Shemesh Israelites whose perspective, understanding, and perception of Jewish traditional concepts in Tanakh is somewhat skewed. And so when they need a place to get rid of the Aron too, it's quite possible that they sent to Kiryat Yarim because at that time Kiryat Yarim may have already been identified as some kind of city that had a kind of religious
shakiness to it?
Not shakiness, on the contrary. The notion of being associated with some kind of religious place, city of Baal, city of Kiryat Baal, some kind of place of Pulchan, some kind of place of service or of had a temple, whatever it was, and they wanted some place that had a was quote-unquote a holier city than Beit Shemesh. So they sent it to the nearest place that had some kind of religious identity to it, which would have been Kiryat Yarim or Baal.
Idol worshiping kind of.
Well, we're still in Beit Shemesh, don't forget. Right? This is Beit Shemeshites. These are the same people who took the Tchavim and the Achbarim and stuck it on this Matzeva and fire came down from heaven. Oh, okay. This is, if you're looking for significant religious depth in the people of Beit Shemesh, we'll have to look at the second half of the shiur. But for now, I'm not sure that that's necessarily what's driving them. And if I'm looking for a historical context to Kiryat Yarim that would have said to them or spoken to them and said, okay, let's figure out where we're going to send this thing, Kiryat Yarim, Kiryat Baal, Baal, maybe that's where it belongs.
But you used the phrase get rid of. Did you really mean get rid of like that?
Oh, it was a hot potato. It was a hot potato. By the time 50,000 people are gone, however you slice the numbers, they were getting rid of this thing fast. They didn't understand why, how, when, or where, but they wanted to get rid of this thing fast. That's one possibility. There's another possibility. And the other possibility is a little more creative, but may fit in the broader context of themes of Tanakh as a whole. And that is that not that they necessarily wanted to send the Aron to Kiryat Yarim per se, but I asked the question at the beginning of the year, why didn't they send it back to Shiloh? So Shiloh was destroyed as a city and as a place of the Mishkan. But it's also possible that they didn't send it back to Shiloh because they were trying to figure out an old, old, old issue. And therefore they sent it Dafka not to Ephraim, not to Shiloh, which was in Shevet Ephraim, but to Kiryat Yarim, or somewhere
not in Yehuda.
Kiryat Yarim's not in Yehuda.
Menashe?
It's in Binyamin.
Oh,
so now, the story of Binyamin is an interesting. The story of Shevet Binyamin is a story that we need to look at. Where does Kiryat Yarim and Shevet Binyamin come into play? Remember, in Yerushalayim, everything south of Yerushalayim belongs to Shevet Yehudah, everything north of Yerushalayim belongs to Shevet Binyamin. Why would the Dafka want to send the Aron back to Shevet Binyamin, of all places? Shevet Yehudah, maybe. No. That's some, that
I mean, very simple. Like practically a civil war between them.
Right.
That, assuming for a moment that we take that story as an early story, then you're talking about 300 years ago. So I'm not overly worried I'm not sure that that plays a significant role yet.
Does Binyamin still have the status of being so special?
Why would you Binyamin have a status of being so special?
Because of who he was and history and
Sefer Breshit style. Okay, maybe. possibly. I say possibly because we know that Binyamin has a unique status. Why he has a unique status is open to question. But we know that he has a unique status in the history of Israel, the land of Israel. If you take a look at the brachas that Yaakov gives to his children at the end of his life, which is in Devarim Perek Lamed Gimel Pasuk Yud Bet. Actually, did I put this on the page? Yeah. So it's 12. Levinyamin Amar. Yaakov is blessing his children. So he's giving each one of his children a different blessing, a whole conversation about what these blessings are, what their purpose is. I think I've shared with you the suggestion that each one of Yaakov's blessings was a geographic identification of where each shevet would be in the land of Israel. And in that context, the bracha to Binyamin says the following. Le Binyamin amar, Yedid Hashem. Binyamin is described as?
Yedid Hashem.
Yedid Hashem means?
Friend,
beloved of God. Yishkon Lavetach Alav. It's source 12. If you're looking for it on the source page, it's source 12. If you're looking for it in the Tanakh, it's Perek Lamed Gimel, Pasuk Yud Bet. Levinyamin Amar, Yedid Hashem, Yishkon Lavetach Alav. Yishkon Lavetach Alav means?
You will dwell forever
with him.
Upon him. Yishkon Lavetach Alav. God will dwell upon him. Safety, security, bitachon.
But isn't
levetach
like lenetzach?
Yeah, levetach in Tanakh is often used as lenetzach. Yishkon levetach alav. God will rest on him for eternity. Chofef alav kol hayom. Hovering over him all the days. Kol hayom. Uven ktefav shachen. Dwelling between his shoulders. So how many times in this pasuk does it say that the Shechina will rest on Shevet Binyamin?
Three times.
I count three.
Mm-hmm.
Yishkon levetach alav, chofef alav kol hayom, then ktefav shachen, three times. Which begs the question, when you put the Mishkan in a place in the land of Israel, in whose Shevet are you going to place the place? Going to place the structure that is going to house the Shechina.
Binyamin.
Right? Logically, the Shechina belongs on Shevet Binyamin, or in Shevet Binyamin, and that is true. In fact, one of the big mysteries in Sefer Yeshua is why Yeshua puts the Mishkan in Shiloh, which is in Shevet Ephraim. Because theoretically, the Mishkan should be in Shevet Binyamin. And in fact, even Yerushalayim, which is a much later part of the history and the story in Sefer Shmuel, is a boundary city, a border city between Shevet Yehuda and Binyamin, but for the most part, the place of the Mikdash was in Shevet Binyamin. There's a Gemara, it's actually Gemara in Source 14, the Gemara in Zvachim, that says that there was an extension of Shevet Binyamin into Shevet Yehuda, because the Yerushalayim really belonged to Shevet Yehuda. But the Mishkan itself, the Mikdash, had to be in Shevet Binyamin, and so there was a kind of like finger that jutted out from Shevet Binyamin into Shevet Yehuda in order to allow for the Mikdash to be in the Nachla of Binyamin, even though Yerushalayim was for the most part the city that belonged to Yehuda. That same Gemara suggests the possibility that that was also what happened to Shevet Ephraim. Even though the Mishkan was in Shevet Ephraim, the actual physical location of the Mishkan was kind of a finger that jetted out from Shevet to Binyamin. But that's really an after-the-fact explanation, meaning the reality is that Shiloh was a city that belonged to Shevet Ephraim. So why did the Mishkan go to Shiloh and not to Binyamin? Right, why did it go to Shevet Ephraim and not to Shevet Binyamin? That's the question. There's no question that the Torah, Yaakov in his, oh sorry, Moshe, I said Yaakov, Moshe in his final bracha to Bnei Yisrael makes it clear that the Makom HaShechina is designed to be in Shevet Binyamin. Now, where in Shevet Binyamin? That's undefined. That's undefined. And in fact, if you look at source 13, it's clear in Parshat Re'eh that the place that would finally be the chosen location for the Shechina was undefined at the time of the Torah. You have not yet come to that place which is called the resting place for the Shechina. However, vavartem et Yarden, once you cross over the Yarden, vishavtem ba'aretz asher Hashem elokechem menchil etchem, and dwell in the land that Hashem will give you, v'yaniach lachem mikol oyveichem misaviv, and you will, God will give you respite from all of your enemies surrounding you, vishavtem betach, when you dwell securely, that's the trigger for when you know that it's time to build the Beit HaMikdash. That verse is, in fact, the introduction to Shmuel Bet Perek Zion. When David HaMelech wants to build the Beit HaMikdash, it says that God gave him respite from all his enemies and the land was dwelling securely, so David turned his attention to building the Mikdash. It's exactly the trigger. V'haya amakom ashiyivchar Hashem elokechem bo l'shaken shmo sham sham ataviyu et kol asher anachim etzaveetchem. Then God will choose a place. But it's clear that it's not defined. We know, in hindsight, that eventually the place of the Beit HaMikdash is going to be
Har-Bayit
or Yerushalayim. But it's not defined that way anywhere in Chumash. But what is defined in Chumash is that the place of the Shechina is designed to be Shevet Binyamin. And Shevet Binyamin, Ben Ktefav Yishkon. God will dwell between his shoulders. What does Ben Ktefav Shechen mean?
In his heart or something?
So it could be something philosophical and esoteric and enigmatic.
Could it be between right? Two tribes, meaning Ben Ktefav, you know, two tribes?
His spine? His
shoulders. So for this, we have to go back again to Sefer Yehoshua. Perek Yud Chet. Let's start from the beginning of Perek Yud Chet, actually. Beginning of Perek Yud Chet, Yeshua Perek Yud Chet is a very important Perek because it is the Perek in which Yeshua puts the Mishkan in Shiloh. And it starts with Vayikalu Kol Adat Bnei Yisrael Shiloh. Yeshua gathered all of the people together in Shiloh, Vayashkinu Sham et Oel Moed. And there he placed the Oel Moed, the Mishkan. Vayashkinu Sham et Oel Moed. Ve'aretz nichbesha lifnehem. And so, immediately, of course, the big question is, we just asked it, why is it in Shevet Ephraim and not in Shevet Binyamin?
I know the answer.
Which is?
It's right on the other side of the Yarden. So it's like right when they got into Israel.
No.
Yeah. Not that far.
Here's Gilgal. Okay.
On the top of the big hill, right there. You go across the river and then you go up the
hill. Here's Gilgal Yericho.
It's a long walk.
Here's Gilgal Yericho.
Okay.
Okay. Here's Shiloh.
Yeah, it's up that big hill.
Here's Binyamin Yerushalayim. A lot easier to get to Binyamin than it is to get to
well, it depends what the population was that Shiloh. You had to get through.
Right, that's true. And
what the terrain was.
No. Vayivatu b'mnei Yisrael asher lo chalku et nachalatam shiva shvatim. seven tribes that had not yet conquered their territory. Yomer Yehoshua ben Yisrael ad ana atem mitrapim lavo leveshet et ha'aretz shenatan lachem Hashem Elokei Avotechem. How long are you going to procrastinate the conquest and the settlement of the land of Israel, the land that God has given you? Havu lechem shlosha anashim l'shavet v'ashalachem v'yakum. Give me three representatives per tribe. Ashalachem, eshlachem, I'll send you out as kind of cartographers, early cartographers. V'yakumu v'yitachu ba'aretz v'yichtuvu ota lefi nachalatam v'yavo elai. Each one of you will go to your territory. You'll map out what your territory is. You'll come to me. V'yitchalku ota l'shiva chalakim. And I will divide the land into its seven tribes. Yehuda yamod agvulo minegev. In the south, Yehuda will take their territory because they've already settled it. They've already conquered it back in the earlier part of Yehuda. Ubet Yosef yamdu agvulam mitzafon. And Ephraim and Manasseh who have conquered their territory, they will take their land in the north. V'atem is for the rest of you tribes. Tichtavu et ha'aretz shiva chalakim. Go and divide up the rest of the land by your seven portions. And v'atem elai nehena v'yaritu lechem goral po lifnei Hashem elokeinu, and we'll do a goral. And you'll be able to settle your land. Now how does the math work? There's no ki ein chelek la'leviyim b'kirbechem. There's no portion for the Levim. And Reuven v'Gad, Reuven v'chatzi shevet ha'menasheh lakhu nachalatam me'ever liyarden. And the two and a half tribes of Reuven, Gad, and Menasheh already took their tribes, their land. And so what's left, and Yehuda and Ephraim and Menasheh in the north, so what's left is seven tribes. Of the seven tribes that are left, one of them is
Binyam.
And that's clear in Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayal, Goral, Mateh, B'nei Binyamin. In other words, Yehoshua places the Mishkan in Shiloh, not because he chose Ephraim as the place of the Mishkan over Binyamin. He chose the Mishkan in Shiloh because of the tribes that had, at this point, at the end of the life of Yehoshua, had succeeded in setting up their tribal territories and settled the cities, was Yehuda south in the south, and Ephraim and Manasseh in the north. So everybody else was still Canaanite. So he needed to break, this we talked about before, he needed to break base camp. They were sitting in Gilgal for 14 years. And in Gilgal, everybody kept going, conquering the territory, and then coming back to Gilgal. And Yeshua had said, enough already, we need to get out of Gilgal, and you need to go and realize this is your home, go and settle the land and be there. And so he breaks up camp, moves the Mishkan. Now he's got to move it somewhere. So the logical place is Shevet Binyamin, but Shevet Binyamin is one of those tribes that has yet to conquer the land. And so he sends it to Ephraim. I suspect on the intention of being a temporary position for the Mishkan until Shevet Binyamin is ready. And it's temporary, lasted 369 years. Shiloh? Well, Binyamin is conquered at some point or another and settled, but the Mishkan never gets moved. Yeshua dies and moves on to Sefer Shoftim, and the Mishkan stays in Shiloh for 369 years. That certainly was not Yeshua's intent, because the Torah clearly states that the Mishkan belongs in Shevet Binyamin. Now go one step further. What does Ben Ketifav Shechen mean? So look at the way in which Shevet Binyamin is described. The description of the territorial region of Shevet Binyamin, which is the next paragraph, starting with Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayal Goral Mateh Binyamin Lemishpochatam Vayetze Gvul Goralam Ben Bnei Yehuda Uven Bnei Yosef. Okay, so they're sitting in between Yehuda in the south and Ephraim and Asher in the north. V'hi lehem agvul ifat tzafona min ha'yarden, from the Yarden northward, their boundary. V'ala ha'gvul el ketef Yericho mitzafon, to the hill or the shoulder of Yericho. Now, what's a shoulder of a road? The side of the road. What's the shoulder of a city?
The
Right? What's Ketzav Yericho?
Suburbs.
Right? If your city is on a if your city's in a valley or in a hill, then the shoulder of the city is the side of the mountain that bounders the boundaries your the area. So Ketef Yericho mitzafon, from Yericho in the north, the edge of the valley in which Yericho sits, Viala Bahar Yama, going up the mountain westward, Vayatotzotab Midbar Beit Aven, coming down into the area of the Midbar to Beit Aven, Vavar Misham Gvul Luza, area of Luz, known as Beit El, El Ketef Luza Negba, to the southern slope of the shoulder of the area of Luz, he betel. Yirad the gvul atvot Adar, al ahar sheminegev of the Beit Choron Tachton. Ata gvul v'nasav lifat yam negba, the boundary continues to move westward, southwest. Min ahar asher opnei Beit Choron negba v'ayu kotzotzotav el kiryat ba'al, hi kiryat ya'arim, down to the area of Kiryat Baal, Kiryat Yarim, Ir B'nei Yehuda, city boundering the area of Yehuda, Ufat Negba Mekzei Kiryat Yarim, V'yatza Gvul Yama, V'yatza Mayan Min Neftoach. I'm skipping a whole bunch of stuff because it's not relevant for us. V'yarad Gvul Okzei Ahara Asher Opnei Ge Beninom Asher Be'emek Rifaim Tzafona, and the boundary continues to the area of Ge Beninom, the valley of Beninom, which is in the Emek of Emek Rephaim, the valley of Emek Rephaim. These places should be known, familiar to us. Right? Where's Emek Rephaim? Right, it's where the restaurants are. Okay, that's exactly what Emek Rephaim is. It's a valley. Right? It's a valley that sits just beneath Ge Beninom, which is the valley in the bottom of Yerushalayim. All of that is the boundary between Yehuda and Binyamin. V'irad Ge Beninom al Ketef HaYevusi Negba. From Ge Beninom, it went to the Ketef, the shoulder of Yevusi, the Jebusite city or stronghold of Yevusi, V'yirad en Rogel. Ata mitzafon v'yatza in Shemesh, v'yatza al gulot asher nochach male adumim, v'yirad even Bar ben Reuven, male adumim. These cities are named today, not by accident. V'yavar ha-Ketef mul ma'arava tzafona, v'yirad ha-arava, Yevar Gvul a Ketef Bet Choglat Safona Vayu Kototzotav Gvul El Loshon Yam Melach Safona El Ktzei Yarden Negba Zeg Gvul Negev. Vayarden Yigbolo Tolifat Kedma. The Yarden was on the east boundary of Shevet Binyamin. Zot Nachalat Bnei Binyamin LeGvulotei Saviv LeMishpachotam. And then it lists the cities. Take a look in Pasuk Chaf Zayin. Sorry, Chavchet. V'tzela ha'elef v'hayevusi hi Yerushalayim givat kiryat arim. Sorry, givat kiryat arim arba'aseh v'chatzmeh. 14 cities. Now, what's unique about the description of Shevet Binyamin?
Jerusalem.
Well, besides Jerusalem. Jerusalem was a border city between Yerushalayim and between Yehuda and Binyamin in all times. They're all very specific. There's one word that appears in the Nachal of Shevet Binyamin. I have to show you all the Nachalot to understand, but or to see it. But there's a word that appears in the Nachal of Shevet Binyamin that doesn't appear in any other Nachal. And that's the description of the geographic boundary based on the shoulders of the regions that bordered Binyamin, namely the Ketef. So you have Ketef Yericho, the shoulder of Yericho. You have Ketef Luz, the boundary of Luz. You have Ketef Kiryat Yarim, Ketef Yevusi, and Ketef Bet Chogla. Mm-hmm. Now, if you put all that together, I'll show you something interesting. Take a copy of this map and pass
it
down.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of shoulders.
So does that compare to the way that the bracha from Moshe?
Right. So that's the interesting issues that the Mefarshim suggest, that that's what Moshe remember that Moshe's brachot are identified as a kind, are understood to be a kind of identification which each, where each shevet would be in the land of Israel. So there's multiple issues going on with Moshe's bracha, where each shevet would be geographically and what the role of each shevet would be in the land of Israel. But if you look at the description of, this is a map of Nachalat Bnei Binyamin, starting with Yam HaMelech in the bottom right hand corner and moving north, Beit Chogla, Ketef Beit Chogla, Gilgal, Yericho, Ketef Yericho, moving east, moving westward, Luz, Beit El, Ketef Luz, moving southwest, Beit Choron Tachton, Beit Choron Elyon, Sha'alabim, Ayalon, Gezer, Kiryat Yarim. Did everybody see it? I just moved in a circle. Ketef, Kiryat Yarim. Moving further east, Meniftoach, Giv'ah Yerushalayim, Yevus of old, Ketef, Yevusi, Emek Rephaim. So now, draw a, you can either draw the map or you can use your imagination. Draw a circle from Ketef Beit Chogla, Ketef Yericho, Ketef Luz, Ketef Kiryat Yarim, Ketef Yevusi. That's Shevet Binyamin. Uben Ktefav Yishkon.
That's a big area.
The place of the Shechina is defined as the place of Nachalat Binyamin. Ben Ktefav Yishkon. Where in Kiryat Yarim? Makom sheyivchar Hashem mikol shivtei Yisrael l'shachen shmo sham. The where in that location, where in that shevet, is undefined. But it was understood intuitively that the Shechina belongs in Nachalat Binyamin. Yehoshua, back when he placed the Mishkan in Shiloh, placed it in the wrong shevet. Why?
Because this wasn't settled then.
This wasn't settled yet, so he had no choice. So he put it in Shevet Ephraim. What was ostensibly originally, though, what was called the Shiloh plan, and it was supposed to be a temporary place. It ended up being 369 years. Until finally, it took the destruction of the Mishkan to bring the Aaron out of Shiloh. Now it comes back to Beit Shemesh. Wreaks havoc in Beit Shemesh. So what do they do with it? They need to send it somewhere. They can send it back to Shiloh. Shiloh was destroyed. And so again, here I'm conjecturing, because we have no concrete information as to why they sent it to Kiryat Yarim. But the theory possibly is that they chose Kiryat Yarim because it's in Shevet Binyamin. Exactly right. It's in Shevet Binyamin. It's Ben Ktefav Yishko.
Why didn't
they put the Mizbech? The Mizbech and the Aron are separated. Well, they're not rebuilding the Mishkan yet. They're not rebuilding the Mishkan. Remember, the Aron doesn't go to Kiryat Yarim to function. The Aron goes to Kiryat Yarim to hide. And to be protected. But in that context, they chose a city in Shevet Binyamin. They chose what used to be a Givonite city. They chose a city that perhaps has a kind of historical religious significance, the city of Kiryat Baal, which maybe if they would have chosen Yerushalayim, it would have been different. Yerushalayim at this point, however, is non-existent. What is Yerushalayim at this point in history? It's Yevus. It's Yevus. Yerushalayim doesn't exist.
That's the place that, what's his name, didn't want to take his wife to because it was a Jewish
right.
place.
Right, Yevus. In Pilagish Begiva. Yevus Sher Binyamin. And that, so in the end, they send the Mishka, they send the Aaron back to Nachalat Binyamin. And there, it makes a lot of sense. From that perspective, it makes a lot of sense. And once you throw into the fact that Kiryat Yarim is the boundary, the closest location from Beit Shemesh to the beginning of Ketef Kiryat Yarim, the beginning of Shevet Binyamin, That's where they send it to. They send it back into the territory of Binyamin. They send it back, the kind of in the mindset, maybe. It's, again, we don't know because we don't have any information. It's a conjecture. But in their mindset, maybe they're trying to figure out that the reason why this Mishkan didn't survive was because there was a mistake in the first place to put it in Shiloh. And maybe if we send the Aron, let's send it back to Binyamin. And it will never leave Binyamin again until the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed. We'll go from Kiryat Yerim eventually to Yerushalayim. That may be the underlining piece of what's driving the decision to send it to Kiryat Yerim.
The Plishtim didn't take the Mizbeach anyway, did they? Just destroyed the whole place. And
correct.
They took the Ark, so...
Correct. Now the Mizbeach goes to Nov. Whether it's the same Mizbeach or a new Mizbeach, I mean, some point or another, it's the Bama Gdola. The Bama Gdola goes to Nov.
Yeah.
We'll get to the story of Nov by Shaul and David. That's the like. There are two Kohen Gadols during this period of time because there's one by David, one by Shaul, one by the Mizbeach. There's a whole conversation, but we'll get.
But they weren't really, neither place was really functioning as the Mishkan.
That, for that they have what they call the Bamot.
Right.
Right. The Bamot is the high places that they had to... All right. We are going to adjourn here. I will tell you that we actually have concluded or finished in a very clear break place because Perek Zion, which is our next agenda, Perek Zion is the beginning of the story of Shmuel. So we have sort of taken the whole introductory set of prakim that set the background to the life of Shmuel and finished that here. Next year, Bezrat Hashem, as we start up in Bezrat Hashem in Elul, we will look at Shmuel and Shaul and the whole story. So my goal for next year is to start with Perek Zion, if we can get through to Amalek, then that would be good.